We all know the phrase innocent until proven guilty, right?
Oh, yeah.
It's practically ingrained in our legal DNA.
Right.
But have you ever stopped to think about how that principle actually plays out in a real courtroom?
You know, it's funny you should say that because.
Because the case of Michael Taylor back in 1976, which went all the way to the Supreme Court, Taylor v. Kentucky,
Okay.
it reveals just how fragile that presumption can be.
Yeah.
And today, we are diving deep into this case
Right.
and why it is still sending shockwaves through legal circles and what it means for lawyers like you.
This is going to be good.
I think it will be.
What's fascinating about Taylor v. Kentucky is that it forces us to go beyond the simplistic idea of innocent until proven guilty and examine how that principle is actually applied in a trial.
Right.
Because sometimes the very instructions given to a jury can undermine that presumption without anyone even realizing it.
It's almost like a hidden trapdoor in the justice system, isn't it?
It is. It is.
You think you were on solid ground, but suddenly the rules of the game shift. Right.
Our listener, who sent us all these legal docs on the case, wanted to understand why this particular case is still a landmark decision even decades later.
Makes sense.
So let's rewind to that Kentucky courtroom in 1976.
Okay.
Michael Taylor is facing robbery charges accused by James Maddox.
All right, so this is where it gets interesting.
Okay.
It was essentially a he said, she said scenario with no physical evidence to corroborate either story. Think about how often we encounter cases like that where the entire case hinges on who the jury finds more credible.
Oh, all the time.
Right. It really throws a spotlight on just how crucial the presumption of innocence truly is.
Because any little nudge,
Yes.
any subtle bias could tip the scales in a case like that, right?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Now, Taylor's defense attorney was sharp.
Okay.
He knew the potential pitfalls of this credibility contest and specifically requested the judge to give the jury two very important instructions.
Okay.
First, that Taylor is presumed innocent from the start.
He doesn't have to prove he didn't commit the robbery. The burden of proof rests entirely on the prosecution.
Which seems so obvious when you say it like that.
I know, right?
I mean, it's the foundation of our legal system.
Yeah.
But you're saying that even this basic principle needs to be explicitly spelled out to the jury.
It does. And this is where the case gets really intriguing.
Yeah.
The defense also asked the judge to instruct the jury that the indictment itself, that formal accusation, is not evidence of guilt.
Oh.
Now, you and I understand this,
Right.
but for a lay person on a jury, seeing that official document might feel like, well, he must have done something wrong to be indicted in the first
I
place.
can see how that would be misleading.
Yeah.
It's like seeing a movie trailer and assuming, the entire plot. You're saying the judge needs to explain that the indictment is just the opening scene, not the climax of the story.
Precisely.
Okay.
But here's where the case takes a dramatic turn. The judge refused both of those requests. Yeah, the jury only received the standard instruction on beyond a reasonable doubt, which, while important, doesn't directly address those crucial aspects of presumption of innocence.
Huh.
And that's what ultimately landed this case in the Supreme Court's lap.
Wow. So the stage was set for a major showdown over what innocent until proven guilty really means in practice.
Right.
This isn't just legal theory anymore. It's about real-world consequences.
Big time. And the Supreme Court didn't hold back.
Okay.
The majority opinion was like a legal thunderclap, emphasizing that the presumption of innocence is a fundamental right,
Right.
not some optional add-on.
Yeah.
They argued that failing to instruct the jury on this, especially in a case that boiled down to one person's word against another's, created a dangerous risk of bias. It's like sending jurors into a deliberation room with blindfolds on.
So they essentially said the judge threw the whole trial off balance by neglecting those crucial instructions.
Absolutely.
Okay.
And this is where Taylor v. Kentucky goes from being a fascinating case to a must-know legal precedent. The Supreme Court basically sent a message to judges everywhere.
All right, what's that?
Don't play fast and loose with the presumption of innocence.
Right.
Make sure the jury understands exactly where the burden of proof lies.
I'm starting to see why our listener was so interested in this case.
Yeah.
It's not just about one robbery trial in Kentucky. It's about setting the standards for fairness in courtrooms across the country.
Precisely.
Wow.
And the impact of Taylor v. Kentucky ripples out even further.
Oh, how so?
Justice Brennan, in his concurring opinion, went a step further, arguing that presumption of innocence instructions should be mandatory whenever a defendant requests them, regardless of the circumstances.
Oh, wow.
He saw it as a fundamental safeguard against potential prejudice, a non-negotiable part of due process.
So it's not just about judges having the discretion to include these instructions, it's about recognizing them as a core element of a fair trial.
Exactly.
But hold on a second, didn't some of the justices disagree?
Yes. There was a dissenting opinion from Justice Stevens. He argued that the beyond a reasonable doubt instruction was sufficient on its own, that explicitly mentioning the presumption of innocence was redundant.
So it became a philosophical debate about what reasonable doubt actually means in the minds of jurors.
Uh-huh.
Is it enough to imply innocence, or do you need to spell it out?
Exactly. And that's where psychology intersects with law.
Wow.
The majority of the court seemed to be saying that even well-intentioned jurors might not automatically make that connection.
Okay.
Human reasoning isn't always as clear-cut as legal definitions.
That makes a lot of sense.
Right.
It's about recognizing that jurors are people, not robots, processing legal algorithms.
Right.
But even though the Supreme Court didn't specifically rule on the indictment issue, that whole indictment doesn't equal guilt thing.
Yeah.
The fact that the defense even brought it up speaks volumes, right?
It does, because it highlights a subtle but significant danger.
What's that?
Jurors might see that formal indictment and think, well, if a grand jury decided to charge him, she must be guilty of something.
It's like assuming that anyone who gets called into the principal's office must be in big trouble, even if it turns out they just found a lost wallet.
Right. And that's why it's so important for lawyers, especially defense attorneys, to not just rely on the judge to cover those nuances.
Yeah.
Taylor v. Kentucky really drives home the point that jury instructions aren't just legal formalities. They are powerful tools that shape how the entire case is perceived.
So it's like a chess match, where carefully crafting those instructions can make all the difference in the outcome.
Precisely. And for anyone who's ever served on a jury, or might someday, Taylor v. Kentucky serves as a potent reminder to be aware of those subtle cues and biases.
Yeah.
Don't let an indictment sway your opinion before you've heard all the evidence.
Right.
Remember that the presumption of innocence is the starting point, not the finish line.
It's like reminding yourself to read the entire book before jumping to conclusions about the ending.
Exactly. And that brings us to perhaps the most thought-provoking aspect of Taylor v. Kentucky.
What's that?
What if the problem isn't just the content of those instructions, but the language itself?
Mm.
What if the way we talk about the law is part of the problem?
Ooh, that's a juicy question. You're suggesting that legalese might actually be hindering justice.
Well, if jurors are struggling to grasp these complex legal concepts, even when they're explained as clearly as possible,
maybe we need to give the language of the law a makeover. Trade in the dusty legal dictionary for something a little more user-friendly.
It's like we're expecting jurors to be fluent in a foreign language they've never studied. No wonder there's so much room for misunderstanding.
So are there people actually trying to fix this?
Absolutely. And this is where things get really exciting.
Yeah.
There's a growing movement to translate those dense legal concepts into plain English, making the law more user-friendly and accessible for everyone, including those jurors.
So less heretofore and more basically,
exactly.
Right? But how do you go about simplifying something as complex as legal language without losing its essential meaning?
That's the challenge, and it's where a lot of innovative thinking is happening right now.
Okay.
There are initiatives popping up all over the country to rewrite jury instructions using clear, concise language that doesn't require a law degree to understand.
So instead of handing jurors a confusing Latin scroll, we're giving them a clear roadmap written in their language.
Yes.
That makes a lot of sense.
And some of these initiatives are going even further.
Oh, really?
Using visuals, diagrams, even interactive tools to help jurors grasp the key points. They're finding ways to make the law come alive, to make it relatable to jurors' own experiences.
It's like the difference between reading a dry textbook and watching a captivating documentary.
Exactly.
And I bet those plain language instructions are having a real impact on how juries understand their role, right?
You bet.
How so?
Studies are showing that jurors who receive these plain language instructions are more confident in their understanding of the charges, the evidence presented, and their responsibility in making a decision.
Hmm.
They're less likely to get bogged down in legal jargon and more likely to focus on the heart of the matter.
It's not just about simplifying the language. It's about empowering jurors to make informed decisions.
Yes.
And this whole plain language movement isn't limited to jury instructions, is it?
Not at all.
Oh, really? What else?
There's a growing push to use clear communication in all areas of the law.
Okay.
From contracts and wills to legal advice and court procedures.
Mm-hmm.
It's about recognizing that access to justice starts with access to understanding.
It's like we've been operating on this assumption that the law needs to be shrouded in mystery and complexity. But what if that's actually doing more harm than good?
That's the question more and more legal professionals are asking.
Yeah.
There are organizations dedicated to promoting clear and concise legal writing, advocating for a shift in the legal culture itself.
Wow.
They're saying, let's make the law work for people, not the other way around.
I love that, because when the law is hidden behind a wall of jargon, it creates an imbalance of power. It prevents people from fully understanding their rights and participating in the legal system on a level playing field.
You hit the nail on the head.
Wow.
This plain language movement is all about democratizing the law, making it accessible to everyone, regardless of their background or education.
Right.
And lawyers has a big role to play in this.
Like, we're all part of a giant translation team working to make the language of the law understandable to everyone.
We are.
But this isn't just about lawyers and judges, is it?
No.
Don't everyday citizens have a part in this as well?
Absolutely.
How so?
We can all demand clear language from our legal professionals, from government agencies, from anyone who's communicating about the law.
Mm-hmm.
Don't be afraid to ask questions, challenge jargon, and insist on explanations that you can actually understand.
It's about being an engaged citizen, not just passively accepting whatever legalese is thrown at you.
Right, okay.
We need to advocate for ourselves and for a justice system that is truly transparent and accessible to all.
Couldn't have said it better myself.
What?
Taylor v. Kentucky is a stark reminder that something as seemingly simple as the language used in a courtroom can have a huge impact on someone's life. But it also shows us that we have the power to change that.
So it's not enough to just believe in innocent until proven guilty. We need to actively fight for a system that reflects that principle in every word, every action, and every interaction.
Right.
We need to demand clarity, push for plain language, and work together to ensure that justice is not just a lofty ideal, but a lived reality for everyone.
Well said. And that wraps up our deep dive into Taylor v. Kentucky.
This is a good one.
It's a case that continues to resonate because it forces us to examine the very foundations of our legal system and ask ourselves, are we truly living up to the ideals we claim to uphold?
Right.
Let's all keep that question in mind as we navigate the complex and ever-evolving world of law.
I think we will.